Okay, every, welcome everyone for the weekly discussion. We have almost 1 hour for the this week program. So we have assigned topic from the Khuddaka Nikaya Sutta Nipata. Before going to the assigned topic, if anyone is having any interview reports or topic or suggestion or criticism, we can open the discussion for that. And there is no, or after finishing that, we are going to go to particular sutta.
After that, I answer, we have nothing from this side today.
Good. So that means we are going to go to the Attadanda Sutta, the point from where that we stopped last time. I would like to invite Venerable Buddharakshita to present the, or continue the discussion and continue the sutta reading from the last point.
So in this sutta, again, just a quick reminder, this conflict has broken out between the Koliyans and the Sakyans, and it's over a dispute over how a river has moved. The river flooded, and the shape of the river changed, and so land that was once on one side of the river is now on the other side of the river. So there's a dispute over who owns the land, and both clans are going to go to war over this. And so the Buddha intermediates between the conflict, and so he gives this discussion on dispute and why people take up arms or take up rods, as he calls it here. And so he talks about that fear has arisen from one who has taken up the rod. See the people engaged in strife. I will tell you of my sense of urgency, how I was stirred by a sense of urgency. So I'm just going back to the origin of why the Buddha is discussing this sutta, so that we have a kind of an orientation. Because we've now reached a stage of the sutta where the Buddha is getting into what I might call the nuts and bolts of the practice. He's moved past the analysis of why he himself had this urgency to practice, and why he was, the danger that he saw in conflict itself, and how he was going to tackle it. So he says, there the trainings are recited. Whatever bonds there are in the world, one should not be intent on them. Having entirely pierced through sensual pleasures, one should train for one's own nibbana. So here, there the trainings are recited, is referring to, particularly to the Patimokkha, where we recite our rules of discipline. And whatever bonds there are in the world, one should not be intent upon them. So in my own experience in life, people have a bond to, I am this person, I am of this profession, I am of this family, I live on this street, I have this status, and I have, these signs, marks of wealth. I have this house, this car, these children, this profession. I'm an important person. Or the opposite is, I'm not an important person, I can't achieve these statuses, and I'm inferior. Or somebody who will tell you that it's all the same. That everything is the same and nothing is different, and there is no excellence, there is no merit, there is no mastery, everything is the same. So these are kind of bonds we have in the world, and we need to pierce entirely through this illusion that sensual pleasures, that getting my way, having what I want, is not freedom from want. It is freedom of want. So I can have the freedom of want, meaning I live in a nice house or a car or food or so forth, but I'm not freedom. I don't have a freedom from the want itself. I still have this need for status or position or possessions or wealth. I haven't seen through the illusion that it brings to my mind or into my life, that these things will make me happy and that these things are substantial. They're not substantial, they can be lost. So the more provisional somebody's wealth is, you know, for instance, if they lose that wealth, if they don't obtain the goals that they've set for themselves or expectations that they have. I remember one person once telling me, you know, that his son was definitely going to get into, we'll say it was medicine. And I said, you know, are you sure? And he said, oh, absolutely. And I said, well, what happens if he doesn't? And he said, well, that's not going to happen. And I mean, his son didn't get into medicine. And, you know, it was inconceivable to him at the time, you know, that something very difficult was, was granted. And that's not how it is in life. You know, something very difficult is not certain. And he couldn't even imagine the possibility that the very difficult was not certain. My point being that bonds can be very strong, and we can have these kind of bonds for all kinds of things. We have expectations, and it can be very difficult to pierce through. Well, what happens if your son doesn't get into medicine? Well, his son didn't get into medicine, and you know, he had to get on with his life, and he managed. He got on fine. His son did fine, and it was just very interesting to It's an experience that just stuck out in my mind. So sometimes I think to myself, well, what happens if I don't get that? You know, will I be okay or not? And most of the time it's like, okay, I can manage that. So having entirely pierced through sensual pleasures, one should train for one's own nibbana. So here he doesn't translate nibbana, but it means to extinguish. So I nibbana the lights, I switch off the lights, I nibbana a fire, I extinguish the fire. It just means to put out something, to extinguish something. We confuse nibbana as a place. It's like heaven. Other religions will sell you that if you practice their religion, that they'll sell you the deal of going to heaven. And it sounds very pleasurable, and it sounds like a better deal than my present existence. As I remember one person once saying, it's like pay now and gain later. If you do the good deeds in this religion, you're paying now for the good later, which is that you would go to heaven. Whereas in Nibbana, we don't have this deal of going to heaven. We have extinguishment, and we're extinguishing these profound bonds that we have in the mind. We're extinguishing this fire. And we're extinguishing the causes and conditions that bring about suffering itself. That the greatest release, the greatest pleasure is to be free from suffering. It's not the freedom of suffering, meaning I can choose whatever kind of suffering I want. It's freedom from suffering, where there isn't suffering arising. And suffering isn't freedom from hardship or difficulty. The life of a bhikkhu is quite hard in many ways. It's a very, very... very simple life, maybe one meal a day, live in a very simple dwelling where, you know, have one set of robes maybe, one bowl, almost no possessions. It can be very challenging in many ways. So it's definitely not a freedom of wants. You know, you can't have whatever you want, but it is a freedom from want, where you have made peace. You know the difference between necessity, need, and desire. And you can distinguish these things. And you can make peace with your situation in the world. And especially you can make peace with sensual pleasures and the illusion that they bring that this is, heaven. It isn't heaven. It's just an attachment and a bond, and it's an enslavement. So it can be very easy to give up things we don't like, but it is very, very difficult to give up the things that we do like. So this is the challenge. People really can find it hard to, you know, they find it very easy. They work hard to give up the thoughts of aversion, of hatred, of ill will. You know, they know that they don't like this, but then they... they definitely don't like to put the work into giving up the thoughts of desire or pleasure or especially these kinds of pleasure and thought and desire that are not really helpful towards the escape from suffering itself. So we have pleasures and within the monastic life, we have pleasures of samadhi, we have pleasures of a calm and peaceful mind, we have pleasures of being free from like moral danger, that we've done things that are morally wrong, that we've stolen or harmed people. You know, we have freedom from this. We live a very a life without blemish, in the real sense of the word of without blemish, that it doesn't have any stains of theft and covetousness, wishing on others or ill will towards others. You know, we've made peace with a lot of these things, and that life is kind of without blemish, and we have this kind of peace of mind from sila. We have done a lot of generosity, dana, and we have cultivated a bright and beautiful mind. So these are subtle kinds of pleasure. You have to kind of acquire a taste for peace itself. Like sometimes I look at people and they're in a drama, they're in chaos, but they're addicted to the chaos. They love it. And it's very hard for you to get them off of that kind of pleasure of, of chaos and to like peace. So, to surrender oneself to subtle forms of joy is a very difficult thing. So training oneself for one's own nibbana is a tremendous challenge. One has to really recognize what extinguishment of suffering is, that to appreciate that extinguishment of suffering is the highest happiness, and to identify those kinds of happinesses that are genuine happinesses that lead us out of this suffering in the world and lead us towards freedom from samsara, from the rounds of rebirth. And that is the highest kind of pleasure. Maybe you'd like to comment on this in the Sinhalese and the Pali.
What is the particular stanza?
6. There the trainings are recited, whatever bonds there are in the world, one should not be intent on them. Having entirely pierced through sensual pleasures, one should train for one's own nibbana.
So this
number 6.
Specifically by listening to you, what I can understand is setting this kind of values for myself is somewhat easier. But if I think about my loved one, if I think about my hated people, then I am again trapped. So therefore, first setting the values for oneself. Someone is blaming me, someone is praising me, and I lost my goals and kind of thing. I can fairly, I think, better off. But if I think about my loved one, my hated one, then we are completely becoming babies, again vulnerable. So that's the point, the compassion and the mindfulness come into together. If the mindfulness is working with the clear comprehension, you can understand, first and foremost, be mindful and mind your own business. Take yourself secure. Make yourself secure. And don't mix it up. Don't mingle with your loved one or your hate one. Or your family members, clan, and the like-minded people. Or parato, external people. They are, I find, the genius people become so childish when they are thinking about their near and dear ones. And therefore, telling, be mindful and mind your own business, is for them appear like very harsh. You are very dried mind. You are not concerned. You have no empathy. You have no sympathy. You have no compassion. So I am telling that empathy, sympathy, compassion must not disturb your mindfulness. First and foremost, mind your own business, and then you can think about the others. The example given is that to Pandita Sayadaw and one of the great Zen master, both were waiting for 6 hours at the Bangkok airport for a transit. And both of them are talking through the translator. And then Umiya Taung is translator. And the other person has said, what about these two people are talking each other, Pandita Sayadaw and the Zen master? And the Zen master is telling, we are thinking about this helping people and compassion and broad-minded, bodhicitta. And Sayadaw is not giving any response. And he ultimately told the Theravada is kind of a selfish. He's asking for, in this very life, Nibbana for myself. Going to the forest, mind own business. The Sayadaw is still no response. He was insisting. How you see that if you can help others, even the you are waiting till the, even the blade of grass become enlightened. And you take pain. And that's a bodhicitta. We are so. So Buddhism is now mostly Mahayana. Theravada is dwindling off. Because it is self-concerned and selfish. Then Sayadaw ultimately told, can I remind an example given by the Buddha? If the people are fallen down into boggy, muddy area, everyone is fighting. Can someone help others? If you're going to race other person, you will get bogged down. Best thing is you have to go to the dry land first and then put a stick or something like that, get the other person rescued, rather than trying while you are in the bog. This is a very classic example in the Buddhist literature. But today Buddhists completely lost. Specifically, Buddhist masters. Specifically, the meditation instructors. I see they have heart attack, they have early deaths, because they are taking others' pains. Instead of they are taking their own weight. I mean, they can manageable. Whatever may be the oncoming difficulties, but often they make broad heart and wide-minded, broad-minded, and taking care about the other's well-being. I feel so sorry. So if someone is telling kindfulness, not only mindfulness, I feel sorry. Then I pointed for people to please go to him because he is more concerned about the kindfulness rather than the mindfulness. You people go ask, don't come here. My breast don't have milk. It's a male breast. You can suck. But no. No milk. It is not my lack of compassion. But if someone is having the breast and the milk, please go. So therefore, these stanzas, everyone will accept. It is a golden, but we are very frail and failed when we think about our loved and our dear and near ones. That is what you call civilization. Civilization means think in terms of plurality, lost. No way. That's why the Buddha says always go to the forest, sit under a tree and go to a solitude place. Then you can start. You can't start an operation in a kitchen or in the toilet. It must be an operation theater. The climate must be decided. Don't otherwise cut open. I mean, treating a wound or something like that, you can do it. Or third grade anesthesia and local anesthesia, you can do it even in the hospital ward. But don't do it. So present day, teachers become cheaper. They want to give the mass scale freedom, mass scale peace. Ultimately, the teacher is in a trick. So the simple outsider can see what the way. So therefore, these things have nothing to argue. Very good. But when you are practicing with other people, under unavoidable circumstances, we become completely irrational. We become insightful. Outside can see. We are now thinking about someone's benefit or future benefits or other places. Then we are completely at lost. We have lost our attention. But here and now, we are on the tightrope walking. I mean, fairly we can manage. So everyone is a genius. Everyone is having their own capacities and abilities and skillfulness as far as he or her confined to himself or herself. But soon, without knowing it, jump into the plurality, utter lost. hardly I can see any person can manage, can maintain the ship into troubled water. So therefore, Upandita Saido in Galdur, our Yoga Ashrama Sanstava, any person go and accuse him, he can tolerate any amount, even phrasing. But if someone is accusing Venerable Jnanarama or Venerable Aryadhamma, he is vehemently attacking. It is nothing, none of your business. They are very great people. He is in between Venerable Jnanarama and Venerable Aryadhamma. And you can say, Bhante, what is you are doing that you are completely wrong? Maybe, you may be correct. But if you are talking about Venerable Jnanarama or Venerable Aryadhamma, he is like a devil. He can turn into the wall side and listen. So that I found in my character also, if someone is face to face, easily I can tackle. It is somewhat difficult, somewhat troublesome. But happening for a third person, I feel I am in a wrong place. Because I can't decide because the other party is not there. So what I do is I avoid as much as possible that kind of a situation. And if it is so, I say, if it is put in writing, or otherwise please wait till the third party comes. And then finished. Because their interpretation is completely different. The thing, as we assume, what we assume is according to our egotistic ideas. So therefore, as a manager, as a leader, I always keep the transparency. I always give the democracy, ask other people's ideas, and division of labor. You also can do exactly what I am doing. But in absence, I can wait. I can wait till the situation happens. I will tolerate and bear it up. But my best next thing is, let the thing, let the parties get together. Because each and every person, towards themselves, they are quite tolerable. But if we assume, completely wrong. So therefore, Pandita Saido, he says, yutu haki ruchi. Whatever may be do's and don'ts, consider. And haki, is it within my capacity? And the third one is, am I doing it with happily? If it is so, 100% success. That's what you call sampajanya. Before you change the posture, before change the object, before change anything, consider, what are we going to do? Are we falling down from the present setup? Or if it is so, it's foolish. Don't let it happen. If it is happening, let it happen because it's happening through the invitation or this is the circumstantial. Let it happen, observant. We are not leading to misunderstanding and kind of thing. So that is why the vipassana directly face to face with the breath. Face to face with the left leg and right leg. Face to face with the hatred. Face to face with the desire. So you can tackle. They are not so filthy. They are not so, unwholesome. Because face to face, all God believing religious is believing. Next life. And as you mentioned, you are sacrificing present moment for the better future. That is what you call religion. I heard The Old Man and the Sea by the Ernest Hemingway. That's the theme. He hated. Be here, be present. Rather than investing for the future. People go and put money to the till box at the temple and expect better life in the next. So this is how monks are earning money for their bad duties, bad works. Don't give. Give the service. Give the material rather than money. Monks don't know how to handle money. That's the worst situation for the monks. So you take a project and do it. And if it is necessary for the third person, but otherwise simply mind your own business. But appear like harsh. But this whole sutta, taking a weapon, taking a rod, taking kind of a thing, then only you are beastly. You are reptilian. You can chew a living creature at your jaw. So this is what the reptilianism, the Illuminatis and reptilians and the conspiracy theories, I spent about 5-6 years to learn it. It is also attavada, it's also thinking someone is doing. No, this is one of the way you can think about the third party. They are reptilian. They are dragons or they are snakes. In India we call snakes, in China we call dragon. Reptilian. You can chew. So this is how they have presented in a epithet as an epithet or example. But this happened whenever the other relevant party is not with us. And in my emails, I try my best, write as much as possible, telling this is what I feel. If it is wrong, please correct me. So if they are not looking at, I can understand he may be busy. But that give kind of a stage whereby we can share, because what we think in a rush is not what is reality. This is not well represented. So we have to do it again and again. Only one viewpoint by listening to your topic, your presentation, is that whenever you are doing for yourself, I think everyone is very, very good. They are so bad when they are thinking about the third party. Everyone is wrong. The only way to rectify is all the parties if present, and then there won't be any hidden agenda. There cannot be any other kind of thing. We can talk, but it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of pain. It is very expensive to have the face-to-face. But for me, to run the Satipasala and Nisarnamani and the global village, internet is helping me. I write everything as much as possible. Unfortunately, when I go back to my archives, I can't find them. That is separate to you. So I ask someone help. But anything, everything is recorded. And therefore, if I am committed, it's now anyone can accuse me. But I think, please, do it. Because we human, as far as here now I am, we are perfect. I mean, we are better than normal humankind. Better than animal kind, animal kingdom. As far as concerned about here now I am. But when you are thinking about the past, future, other people, other places, we have to think we are not even a baby. We are not a beginner. So therefore, give due respect to these parties and they will take their own decision. And I find my possibility for adaptation. That is what I call, you never mentioned the word, but you came almost, utility value. No luxury. Whatever may be utility, then it is a must. But luxury is a crime. Utility value, the Buddha is given the best example. That's a frugal living. You are using only for the utility. Not for the sake of, accumulating and storage. And then and their usage. So therefore, as you mentioned, it's a good enough nut and bolts. But we completely fail whenever we think in at large. When we think at social level, not capitalism, not the communism, not anything is sustainable. They have their own weaknesses. So by knowing, come back to the pivot here, now I am, no question. This is what I thought of sharing for my contribution. Do you want to read it in Sinhalese and Bali? You tell sixth one. Sixth. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I am reading the Pali in Sinhala. This is the English translation. Tattha sikhanu giyanti. Yani loke gatithani natesu pasutosya. Nibbijja sabbaso kame sikhe nibbana mattano. This language is archaic. Even the normal Pali, very difficult because all the words and everything is combined, 2-3 words into one. So therefore one term can have number of interpretations. That is why even in English, but this is a Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation. Bhikkhu Bodhi personally wrote to me, this Sringala translation is the most reliable, Buddha Jayanti. And he took them when he is translating Anguttara Nikaya, but this is a before, and he himself is always evolving through his own translation. If there are any sensuous pleasure in the animal kingdom, therefore to earn, to master that, people have languages and skills. I'm learning because of the desire, sensuous pleasure, only the learning and skillfulness like training elephants and sword fighting and all the things are happening. If a person is well trained and he said morally sound, he will not go behind this training elephants and the other skillfulness. You don't take time. Knowing the disadvantage of the sensuous pleasure, and they have definite characteristic of changing nature, suffering nature, and non-self character, anicca dukkha anatta, only he is training, if at all, not for the skillfulness, only for nibbana. Because all the others indicates your sensuous or sexual desire. That's why you are spending time for studies and the skillfulness. So therefore, this particular person, thoroughbred horse-like, he is not carried away by the sensuous pleasure, sexual pleasure, or materialistic. Still he is training towards Nibbana. That is what the Buddha Jayanti translation is running. Organic. The single translation is more with the Sinhalese culture and giving the examples in the Indian examples. The Bhikkhu Bodhi, this thing is basically with the Western example, and that is digestible for the Western people with Western upbringing. But after learning, it has to come back to this thing. But even then, some terms have traditional smell. But Venerable Jnanananda, he never gave that kind of a stand. He gave a word meaning, which is etymological meaning. So therefore, no Sinhalese Buddhism kind of a thing. But these things are filtered through the Sinhalese Buddhism. But anyway, somewhat organic in understanding. Anyone wish to contribute?
Thank you, Swaminanda. Thank you, Bhante. I was just looking at Bhikkhu Bodhi's commentary, and he actually does cover all those things you just mentioned, Swaminanda, about the training, the worldly kind of trainings of training with horses and chariots and bows, spears, darts. And then he also mentions what you were saying as well as about piercing through sensual pleasures, that all things are impermanent, suffering and dukkha, and not self, and that we should train for our higher nibbana, higher good behavior, higher mind and higher wisdom, and to extinguish one's own lust, hatred, and delusion. It seems like he really does follow. I guess you were reading from the Sinhala commentary there, and it's the same thing, what you were saying. So he does follow, Bhikkhu Bodhi does follow the Sinhala quite closely. And hearing both Bhante and Swaminanda's responses, it brought up for me the interest in the way that we create, that our sense of self, our self-view is the thing that is really the most deeply rooted, form of sensual pleasure, I guess, so that all that we are, there's the more coarse sensual pleasures, food and so forth, but who we feel we are is also kind of linked. It's another form of sensual pleasure, so it's interesting how, you know, I guess we could actually give up all the coarser sensual pleasures and still be clinging to seeking confirmation that I'm right, I'm good, I this sense of I supporting that. You also brought up for me as you were both speaking about how we do that, you know, how we cling to our sense of self and want to support it and look for ways to create ourselves and to support our sense of self. So that it's very difficult because becoming monks, we are still looking for ways to do that. The other thing that came to mind is just our deepest sense of self was experienced as we were children growing up in our families, and that as we go into the world, we carry with us those sort of things that we learned as children, that sense of self that we received from our parents. We are reenacting those things, and we are finding others in our community, whoever our community ends up being. You know, if it's monks, then the people in our community, we look for people that support our sense of self, or we look for ways for supporting that sense of self that we developed as children. And it sounds childish, but, you know, I mean, that's one thing I think that psychology is, Western psychology has helped us see, is that that's actually what people do, you know. And we are deep fears and desires that we experienced as children. We tend to hold on to those views of ourself and carry them out into our lives. So it's very difficult because those are subconscious views. And it's what people tend to do is... because they don't see what they're doing. They don't. When you're a child and you create a view of yourself, it's a subconscious process. So, in the present, in our present, and continuing on, we tend to continue those habits. But I think meditation and mindfulness helps us to be a little bit. Separated from that, we can actually see. We can see it more clearly, what's happening, and we can kind of see ourselves from a little bit more of a distance with some space. And so that, you know, the practice supports us and helps us to see those subconscious views start to come up a little more. More clearly, and just the simplicity of the life helps. Of say a meditative community life, because it's so simple, we're able to actually see, you know, see our activities with others and our connection with others, and see how that is playing out. It's much more easy. If you have a complicated life, which is always moving around and interacting with many people and concerned with paying the bills and so forth. And as well, you know, if you're one of those people that is living a lay life, it's good to go on a retreat and spend maybe a week or even a month and be able to drop all those outward concerns and be able to see yourself without all the distractions. So these are things I thought of. Thank you, Swami Nansa. Thank you, Bhante.
So regarding that, I have two comments. One thing is, our mind at the superficial level, it is sensual and sexual pleasure. And it knows only that. But when mind is go deeper and deeper, it knows it can cut off sensual pleasure in terms of materialistic world, that's called Rupa Loka, that means Jhanic world. We give up the sensuous pleasure or sexual pleasure and come to the Jhanic pleasure, that is called Kama Chanda, is replaced by Ekagata. And then they can live and they are completely cut off, they are buffer off, they have a buffer to the sensuous and sexual world. And then still it can go to the subtle materialistic world, therefore the material world also replaced. So it is replacement three times, Kama Loka, Rupa Loka, Arupa Loka. Kama Loka is run by scripts, put onto our mind by our parents and the teachers. We have values. So I can protect my values, no harm. When he is coming from different parents and different teachers, he behave in front of me, he do not know my basic values. What the hell, he is barbaric. He don't know. Well, he is not one of my family members. So there I can tolerate, away from my scriptures, I can understand his behavior is natural, but I develop a hate-like thing. What the hell did he do not know even the basics? My parents are not allowing to do that, but he is doing in the open space. We never communicate. We are running by scripts. So these are the things we call personality traits. Or directed disposition. Of course, directed dispositions are from the sansaric habituation. But in this life, parents are doing such a crime. They had built up children in order to fulfill their desire. Children are the offspring. So they prepare themselves. You must be a doctor, you must be a station master, you must be a lawyer. And ultimately when they become successful, as you mentioned, when the child goes to the medical faculty, lost. And today medical science is a crime. I am telling openly. People can maintain their health without these bloody organizations. WHO and all the kind of, they organize crimes. You can see real Anthony Fauci. So much of films. I have no time to go through it. Without them, forest living is very successful. But when you go to the Jhana Loka, its mind is fairly uniform, universal. Dalai Lama is under the impression that scripts, whatever it may be, people are the same. Chinese culture, American culture, Eastern culture, people are the same, specifically young children. If someone is proving, he gets excited. No, people are the same. I mean, if the Jhana Loka happened. But when you go to the subtle materialistic or Arupa Jhana, that is completely different world. It is not being exposed unless otherwise this Avatar project and all the bloody shits in American film society. This is invincible. You can go and kill people and all the kind of thing. I mean, Arupa Jhana is not that. It's a pure. But it is the thing happened. Everything was there before the Buddha appeared on the earth. That's the scripts. Education system is a hidden curriculum. It is fed up you with the square mind scripts. You can't escape, but mindfulness give a release. And the other thing is, when the mind go inside, you become freedom of the external crust. The Rupa Loka, Kama Loka. But the very boring. It's quite boring because you are living in the forest all alone and sitting, sleeping on the same one bed, having one meal and no relationship with and no motivation. I mean, it is so common even in New York. People hate it. They feel boredom. They feel monotonous. They feel loneliness. They never consider it as aloneness. This is the point where the Dhamma is necessary. They feel it's lonely, they feel out of the hysteria, frustration, depression. But the Buddha would say, hey Dali, you are alone. It's a blessing. So Western medicine, Western psychiatry never thought about that, because all psychiatrists are mad people. All mad. They have never practiced. Upandita Saido says, all the chief justices must have at least first jhana before go to the decision. I mean, final verdict. Unlucky enough, not a single Supreme Court judges, they are not practicing. This is a disqualification for their law. But it's a Roman Catholic law. Buddha is not there. The whiteness is not there. Bloody people with the hand, head cup and the white clad, white cloak, this thing, put people into the court and decide. That is because they are in outer crust. Agantuka upakkilesa. So therefore, no justice there. Don't expect any justice, no purity, no upliftment. So you have to understand, then you have to cut the going against the orbit. You go to space odyssey, you go to the Rupa Loka, either jhana, the samatha jhana, vipassana jhana. You can have split second. You can have momentary free of it. But world is not allowing us to do it. They wish to have the socialization and go forward and kind of thing. But still, you have to take a very unhuman, unsocial decision to be in the Rupa Loka. And still go to Arupa Loka, still you are not liberated. Still you are in bhava. Then again you have to put a somersault and jump just like a pole vault. You have to throw the stick and jump over. Only Buddha found it. So therefore we are talking, we have to understand, verify whether we are in the Kama Loka, Rupa Loka, Arupa Loka. In Pottapada Sutta, the Pottapada disciples, as far as you are in the Kama Loka, you can't comprehend Rupa Loka. It's completely exclusive. And you can't comprehend Arupa Loka. When you go to a Rupa Loka, if you consider the Kama Loka, your dhanak will be, jhana facilities will be dropped, disqualified. You can't think about Arupa Loka. If you go to Arupa Loka, you are completely cut off. It's a complete different world from the Rupa Loka and Kama Loka. So exclusively different. So within oneself, three cases. Outer case, middle case and inner case. In Hinduism, five cases. You go deep, 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 like Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vinyana. Once you master Rupa, you can go to the Vedana. Once you master Vedana, you can go to the Sanya. Then Sankara, at the inner core, you have the Vinyana, that is the mafia leader. He's living in the inner core. So we are slowly, slowly cut off Rupa by the Kama Loka, Rupa Loka, Arupa Loka. Still, Sankhara, Vijnana, thriving and sustaining. You are not dealing with sexual pleasure, not sensual pleasure. You are not with the materialistic pleasure. You are not subtle material. Still, self is there. If you are making one statement, one sentence, within that you can find the self. Don't get angry. That is our discussion is. We must throw, we must thrash each other to find out. Therefore, one thing is the core theory. Outermost layer is the point where scripts are working. Parents and the teachers and the education. But you can go to Rupa Loka, still through the Samatha, and there you are free from scripts. You are in the universal language. You can go to the Arupa Loka, subtle materialistic. They are completely different language. They are three spheres. Within one, you have all the layers. And therefore, external thing in the scripts, in the sensual pleasure, no peace, no upliftment, no purity. Don't talk nonsense. You have to do that opportunist. That's the only way out. You have to be an opportunist, that is the business world, and then go to the Rupa Loka and subtle materialistic world, Rupa Loka, jhana, and then you can understand the point where the Buddha is talking about. Our parents, our teachers, our judges, our bank managers are utterly in a shit. They can't purify you. They can put into more shit. They are in the boggy places. They try to push you up. They will get bogged down. 2 points.
Anyone wants to comment on that? Otherwise, I would have a little other point.
No, you have your time. You're a psychiatrist. I am sorry, no, I was not aware.
Not about that one.
No, I will give you lessons, no problem. Buddhist psychiatrist.
Yeah, no, I didn't want to talk about that one.
On 12th, Kaduvelaviya, full day. And the Kalaniya University, postgraduate director, Kundasale Siba director, and all the lecturers, and 150 children, I mean students, all practicing mindfulness. We have one full workshop.
In English?
That is a problem, because that we can't do it in Sinhala. We can't clear it is English. But I think many things will be communicated in English. Because these things are not in Sinhala. These books you can't find. They are complete archives. This in the these books are in the museums. Only Sinhala part, English part is the posh. So I invite you to learn Buddhist psychiatry. All the top duns will come. I'll be in the morning time. Okay, sorry. This time.
Yeah, thank you. I want to just briefly come back to the first point, actually. You said about the compassion, and I found it interesting how you put it. Put me right, if that was not your words. But that it's not mindfulness and compassion like opposites, but rather a right understanding of compassion, like a right and a wrong compassion. One, which is really helpful for others. And where is the line to rather mind your own business, and then you can also have compassion with others? That I found nice. And also reminded me of the situation like just right now, when, for example, another German friend is coming here, and I find myself in the situation, where am I helping or making it comfortable for him, and where am I acting out of just my own interests? And maybe
it's
for my
vested interest.
Yeah. And you know, so where can I just mind my own business?
You know the term vested interest?
No.
So you assume it's my duty. You don't know. You assume and put into interpret terms. It's a curse. It's the worst thing according to Bertrand Russell. Vested interest. That's what's called the missionary. None of your business. He will take care about him. But if he ask, don't hesitate. Yeah. But vested interest is a poison. I am always searching if someone is inviting, is he in the vested interest or he is inviting for himself? Then I will take care. If he is thinking about someone, I say, mind your own business. I have no compassion. I am not yielding, I am not fertilizing for vested interest. But I try myself, myself, not to fork fingers into other psychologies. Let them have. If they are asking help, it's a separate issue. Again, sorry for distracting. Sorry for disturbing your free flow.
No, that was exactly the point. Thank you. Yeah.
About 20 minutes more.
Okay, one thing about that jhana approach to vipassana, and even if it is pure vipassana, but what I see when we actually concentrate, I mean when we are mindful about our main objective, so it
object
yeah main object, object and then it kind of decays at a time, and when we come to vedana vipassana also it also decays, and then after that we feel sometimes emptiness, and then through chitta vipassana also there are mind play games and kind of a strange drama going on within ourselves also. So I think in the inner layer also there's kind of it's programmed, like kind of a natural program running. And after that also what I see is a main object also change time to time when you observe, when we mindfully look at it. Bhante, then when we want to back that thing, I think we need honesty and adaptability.
Yeah, true to type. You must be true to type. You have the electricity, you have electronics, and you have electric power. While using electric power instrument, you have to understand electricity. And through, you have to understand electronics. Bloody one, no one has seen electronics. They are expert on electronics. Have you seen any bloody fellows have seen electronics? Talking nonsense. Earlier they used electrons are traveling from positive to negative. And then they took a decision, oh no, it is wrong. It is coming from negative to positive. Just like God is available or not. Whether karma and karma theory, yes or no. They are decisions. They are theories. Theses, not proven. So therefore, while this worldly drama is happening, jhana is always there. If you look at jhana, it's there. Worldly drama is in the different sphere, drama, worldly, the rupa jhana, and arupa jhana also there, because you are the potentiality is there, but you can plug into one. If it's a worldly drama, you are cut off from the jhana and the arupa jhana. If you plug into the rupa jhana, you are cut off from the world game and the arupa jhana. If you plug into the arupa jhana, you can't cut off. You are complete. And when the Cittahatta Sariputta is talking, Buddha exactly accepts it. And give the theory of anatta, where you plug in, decide who you are. What you see that you are. Where you go, there you are. If you are in the worldly drama, you will be taken for a ride. And so much of fluctuations and hacking and the frustration, tension and all the kind of hysteria. But still you can be with the jhani atmosphere, worldly drama can happen. I mean, you are not also influencing, that is also you can't influence. But still you can go a rupa jhana level. These all are existing. But the example I give is, while you are sitting and you know your object is, rupa is anapanasati. And while you are practicing, a sound happens, another rupa, another singer. And while you are trapped, taken away for a ride, for a music, you can still see breathing is happening. While you are listening, your breathing never stops. Now you have a chance either to entertain the sound or music, or still can you see the breath. And at that time, you won't believe. Breath is still coming down. You won't believe. Breath is meditating. You are in the shit, external. So you find fault with the sound. No, you are the bloody fellow disturbing the sound. Because jhana is here. Breath is there. The day you can see both, it is impossible, theoretically. You can have a sneaking mind to see while I am entertaining the listening, what will happen to this? Immediately the thrills and the frills of music goes down. Musicians do not like it. They won't have the frills and thrills. They keep the stage drama and dramatic bass music and all the kind of thing. But you can see it's just a nuisance. Because you occasionally look at your breath. Breath is happening. Even if you are listening, if you are thinking, even if you are in the pain, other places, breath never stops. That the Buddha did so much of experiment to find the breath as a buffer. Whatever the thing happen, if the mind goes there and it is taken for a ride, that is your foolishness. That is your ignorance and your desire. But you have this privilege. This privilege, it's a pivot. But the other side is subtle jhana. Arupa jhana, still you can. And that is called Brahma loka. This is called Deva loka. And the drama is we call human world. So what the economy means, what the political means, what the social means, is shit. The external, agantaka upakkilesa. So that is what we are spending from 5 to 25 age to learn about shit. The best life of our time. Spend for education. That bloody fellow, they are not talking about something experienced. They are passing by the blind-handed. And we take and we have written the example, exams, and we got through. Because we are good cheaters. We are cheating. All the exams we go through, we know we are in a drama. We are successful. A lot of failed. And they have fallen back to the normal pit. But still they are human. Potential-wise, they are the same. And Satipasala, we are trapping all the dropovers. And we find they have abilities, they have the potential, then the possibility through mindfulness. So mindfulness is a kind of a central theme. whereby Rupa Loka, Arupa Loka, all thing, we have kind of a relationship like electronic, electric and electric power. There's a commonality. That's a mindfulness. So therefore, if you look at it from that side, all the world masters are best cheaters. They never think about in this very life. They are great advisors to people to have the least frictional path. Bloody fellows are in friction. In selfish compassion, as you mentioned, two types. Promoting yourself in and selfless compassion. Selfless compassion the dog is having. Birds also having for their children. There is no self. Human, utter cheaters. They are always protecting ego and telling, no, my theory is golden. It's a double doctorate. Nonsense. Because they are, anyone can see how much you are promoting yourself. Egocentric kind of thing. So this is fairly touched by the Western psychology, and they accepted existentialism, Sandrushtikavada, to give an explanation of what is happening. Otherwise, they thought by learning psychiatry, you can predict the behavior. Never. Existentialism is the ultimatum. I have the book, 6 Existential Thinkers. 3 of them are believing God. The best psychiatrist, the Kierkegaard and Jean-Paul Sartre, and all the kind of, they still believe God. How come? How come? How the scientists can believe God? They know they have double action. Maybe I am too harsh. Okay, few minutes. Ah, Chinese. I'm very happy with you.
Again, I think it's okay.
Yes.
Pandey, my question is, it's in your book. I also use your book to... in your book, you talk about the one point. Yes, when you can keep your breathing in one point, you don't need to care about the touch and the other about the warm and cold. Your book is talking about this. But last time you tell me if the touch and the wind, and the cold and the wind happen, you need to know that.
No, 3 aspects. I try to explain you. One thing is either you are in walking or you are in breath. You are talking about the walking or sitting?
No, the sitting meditation.
Sitting. Or when you are sitting?
No.
Listen, 3 aspects, 3 dimensions, 3 facets. One thing is you are not listening, you are not thinking, you are not pain, you are breathing. That's the one aspect. On top of that, you can have the touching point, one point or few points, and touching point is the second. And on top of that, you can understand in-breath is cooler and out-breath is warmer. It's the third dimension. You know, now you are talking about the second, the touching point. It's one of the 3 aspects, 3 facets.
The book in this place.
Okay. The walking meditation.
I show you, okay.
So can you read the English part?
This and this.
If you are naturally inclined toward the serenity meditation, then as your mind calms down, to become concentrated, the breath will also settle down without any steering or direction from the mind. The more you experience the settling down of the mind and the breath, the deeper will be the calmness. The concentration deepens, the observing mind will be left without any sensation of the breathing. Yeah, you will calm down, you don't feel the coldness, calmness, hardness, stiffness, tension. But you know it is go deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be strong, the samadhi, yes.
Yeah, that is called samadhi.
Yes, and don't care about us.
Not don't care. Samadhi means it's a penetrating through one point. Mindfulness is you know you are with the full samadhi. You don't know the heat and cold, stiffness and tension. You can understand through the mindfulness as far as the samadhi is there. You cannot be aware of the heart, stiffness, tension, heat, cold. But unawareness, you know.
I know.
Boring.
Yeah.
So good. I tell you, I feel boring.
If you are not boring, you are in sansara. If you are boring, you are to the nibbana. You understand?
What?
If you are not boring, you are in sansara. What do you mean sansara? Sensuous pleasure.
What's sansara?
Sensuous pleasure. You are seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, your pleasure. Yeah. No boring. When the boredom happens, it's a sign of nibbana, cessation.
Oh, so you, I need to look at the boredom?
I don't know. I am asking you. What are you looking for? Sansara or nibbana?
What's sansara?
Sansara is the worldly pleasure.
I can translate.
So I am very happy, sansara. No. Sansara, worldly pleasure. Worldly pleasure. Worldly pleasure. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh.
You mean like I really enjoy the
worldly pleasure
in the meditation?
Yeah. No, whatever you see, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching is the worldly pleasure.
Yeah.
But when the boredom happens,
yeah,
no worldly pleasure.
Yes.
Sansa nibbana. Nibbana is the opposite, the other side.
What's nibbana? It does feel some and not about nibbana. I'm talking about nibbana.
Yeah. So that is what you're talking about, nibbana. Experience of nibbana is no pleasure, no pain,
yeah,
no kind of titillation, no kind of, I do call, the motivation. Mm-hmm. So you are very close to nibbana if you like. We are not close to China. Very far away from China.
But very interesting about
you. So you can come. You can come to me at about 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
Yeah, today.
Today, 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
Okay.
And then we can have a little time.
Okay. Thank you, Pandey.
Welcome. So this is the end of today's discussion. Thank you very much for your participation and the contribution. We'll mark the end.